Imagine a world where death is not just an abstract concept, but a person with a job, and he's getting tired of it. In the bizarre reality of Discworld, a flat planet carried through space on the back of four elephants standing on a giant turtle, Death is a 7-foot skeleton with glowing blue eye sockets who speaks in all capitals and has developed a curious interest in humanity. After centuries of collecting souls, he decides he needs an apprentice and some time off. Enter Mortimer, Mort for short, a gangly, thoughtful teenager whose body seems constructed primarily of knees and elbows, all operating with minimal coordination. Too philosophical for practical farm work, he wonders why teeth fit so perfectly together and why daylight comes during the day when it would be more useful at night, Mort stands alone at a midnight hiring fair when a mysterious hooded figure offers him an apprenticeship. Not in carpentry or blacksmithing, but in the family business of mortality itself. Riding on Binky, Death's magnificent white horse, Mort arrives at a curious realm outside normal time and space. Death's domain is a black and purple mansion filled with hourglasses, one for every living person, and a library where biographies write themselves in real time. Here, Mort meets the household. Albert, Death's grumpy manservant who cooks surprisingly normal meals, and Isabel, Death's perpetually 16-year-old adopted daughter with pearly eyes and a haughty attitude. Death's first lesson for Mort is disappointingly mundane, clean the stables, but soon progresses to soul collection. They visit the castle of Stolat, where King Olerv is dying from poison administered by his ambitious cousin. Watching Death gently collect the king's soul as it collapses into a brilliant pinpoint, Mort feels a stirring of compassion and attempts to interfere, earning a stern rebuke. To tinker with the fate of even one individual could destroy the whole world. Yet something about this lesson, particularly the glimpse of the king's daughter, Princess Kelly, stays with Mort, planting a dangerous seed of rebellion. After several successful collections with Death, Mort begins solo assignments. Death, fascinated by human experiences, takes time off to try fishing, dancing, gambling, and cooking in Ankh-Morpork. Mort's first two collections proceed smoothly. An elderly witch who becomes beautiful in Death, and a reincarnating monk who asks to be dropped off where he's being conceived about now. His third assignment changes everything. Finding Princess Keeley about to be assassinated, Mort makes an impossible choice. Instead of collecting her soul, he kills the assassin, saving her life and creating a cosmic paradox. Reality splits in two, with a shrinking bubble around Stolat where Keeley lives, while outside this bubble, history proceeds as if she died. Inside the palace, courtiers unconsciously treat Keeley as deceased, walking softly around her and forgetting her presence moments after speaking with her. Only a wizard named Cutwell can still perceive her consistently. Meanwhile, Mort himself is changing, speaking in capital letters, walking through walls, and becoming unnaturally solid as Death's power consumes him. As the reality bubble around Stolat shrinks, Mort and Yazabel discover Albert's shocking secret. He's actually Alberto Malich, founder of Unseen University and greatest wizard in history. 2,000 years ago, Alberto's immortality spell backfired, summoning Death instead. He bargained for eternal service in Death's timeless domain to preserve his remaining 91 days of life. Despite Mort's appeals, Albert refuses to help save Princess Kelly, fearing his lifespan would resume counting down in the mortal world. Meanwhile, Mort and Yazabel struggle with Death's duties, including complex mathematical nodes that ensure Death occurs at the proper time. These calculations appear as spiderweb patterns in Death's ledger, patterns Yazabel can interpret from quietly observing Death during her needlework sessions. Their efforts can't prevent the reality interface from collapsing around Stolat, forcing them into a desperate race against time. With the reality bubble shrinking to mere yards around the palace, Mort realizes their only hope is to use the speed of night. In Discworld's magical field, light moves slowly, but darkness travels even faster. Riding Binky across the disk, they race ahead of midnight itself, surrounded by crackling serpents of rainbow light. They arrive at Stolat with minutes to spare before reality collapses completely. Inside the palace, they find Kelly confronting the Duke, who believes she died in a chaotic coronation ceremony involving a drunk elephant. Mort insists on completing Kelly's coronation to legitimize her rule. Cutwell performs a makeshift ceremony using a flea removal spell as impressive-sounding words, while Yisabel finds a battered gold circlet to serve as a crown. As the reality interface closes in like a collapsing jellyfish, they pile onto the overloaded Binky and flee through the shrinking bubble just before a hole of blackness rushes from the sky to catch them. Their destination? Death's Domain, for a final confrontation with the Master himself. Death confronts Mort with blazing fury over his betrayal, seducing his daughter, abandoning duty, and distorting reality. When Mort invokes the ancient rites of equality between apprentice and master, Death accepts the challenge. Their duel in the long room, surrounded by every living being's hourglass, sends ripples through reality itself. A falling mason mysteriously lands safely, while elsewhere a healthy man suddenly collapses. Mort fights with impressive skill, but Death's millennia of experience gradually overwhelm him. When Chance places Mort's sword at Death's throat, he makes a pivotal choice, lowering his weapon and saying simply, "There's no justice. There's just you." This profound understanding, combined with Isabel confronting her father's hypocrisy, reaches something in Death no blade could touch. Death inverts Mort's empty hourglass in mercy, revealing his deeper purpose. His search for a successor wasn't merely about continuing his duties, but about understanding humanity itself. In Stolat's Great Hall, Mort and Yisabel celebrate their wedding. Mort is now Duke of Stohelet, with crossed scythes on an hourglass as his coat of arms. Queen Kelirena rules with Cutwell as her advisor. Death arrives bearing two gifts, a pearl of reality containing the seed of a universe from the actuality Mort created, and a leather-bound book titled Mort, his life story with many blank pages remaining. When Mort asks about his remaining time, Death assures him it's sufficient, adding that mathematics isn't all it's cracked up to be. With a handshake and preferring au revoir over goodbye, Death departs, perhaps genuinely smiling. What makes us truly alive? Perhaps it's not just breathing, but choosing, making decisions that shape our lives and others. Through Mort's journey from awkward apprentice to confident adult, even Death learns something about living. In a universe where compassion can bend reality and duty sometimes yields to love, our humanity lies not in escaping death, but in facing it with courage, humor, and the understanding that every ending contains seeds of new beginnings.